Welcome to another edition of Conversations of the Heart. As always, it is your boy T. Till here. We have a very, very, very special guest here, Mrs. Janine Ledford. She is an entrepreneur, a keynote speaker. She is the Chief Creative Officer of Cafe Strategies, LLC. She is the creator of the Intercultural Creativity and the Prismatic Leadership. She's also a best-selling author, and along with being the 2015 California Charter Teacher of the Year, 2019 LA Lakers Businesswoman of the Year. I mean, it's endless. It is absolutely endless. But of all things, for the people who don't know you, first of all, welcome to the show. Thank you for doing the show. I absolutely appreciate it. Looking forward to getting into a lot of different things today. But first and foremost, for the people who don't know who you are, just give the people a little bit about yourself.
I am, right? Powerful words. I am light. I am love. I am here to hopefully be a blessing to your audience. I'm Janine Marie Letford the first, and I'm an educator by trade. So I love to be around during that aha moment. I love to teach interactively, love to bring in all the elements of the arts and experiential learning and all that jazz, right? And I taught for 15 years in at one charter school in the Los Angeles area. And then 2019 just felt the word to move on. Where I was moving on, I didn't know, but I knew to address this issue of creativity and the lack of it, lowering in our students, but also in our workforce and in our leaders in the workforce. Didn't know what that looked like. And then after some deeper training and cultural awareness and cultural competency, I just saw the alignment between creative thinking and intercultural development, people's ability to relate and to connect with other people from different lived experiences and to shift perspectives and things along those lines. And I saw that they were aligned. So I said, well, why don't we teach it together? Why don't we intertwine them together? Because they influence one another. And so I just took a shot in the dark, trademarked it, and what, 3 years later, here we are, done training all over the nation, even the world via Zoom. My goal this year or next year is to get to another continent in person. And yeah, did all the research. And another thing that really was big is I got my first fMRI machine, not for any medical reasons, just for pure research at UCLA when I was at undergrad. And 23 years later, I'm kind of giving my age away. Now all of my research is based off of neuroscience. So how does the brain learn? How does the brain deal with bias, assumptions, people from in-group, out-group? And all of that is my work that you see here today. And I feel my gift to the world.
Wow, it's really amazing. And it's interesting you talk about creativity. I think in the workplace, especially growing up, that wasn't a big thing, right? You were told what to do. You had to, look, this is what you're going to do each and every day, right? And that's it. That's really kind of just what it is. And you climb the corporate ladder by doing more than what you're asked for, right? So introducing creativity, I think is amazing, because it taps into that the employees' excitement, right? What excites them to do this work? So when it comes to the prismatic leadership part of it, right, that you teach, can you expand on that a little bit, and why is that important?
Audio. So I'm holding up a diamond. That's why
Yes.
I'm asking. I'm really big on props. I have a brain too, but it's way over there. And because I'm an educator and a speaker, people who work with people or who need to influence people know the power of the metaphors, right?
Yes.
Your great speakers, MLK, JFK, Maya Angelou, Margaret Thatcher, all knew how to use metaphors very well. And so I teach with that. And we teach our logo is the diamond. And prismatic leadership. So we have the seven gems of intercultural creativity, things along those lines, and the 16 diamond tools of creative thinking. But the flagship program for our C-suite and our lead leadership is the prismatic leadership program. And the reason why that's key is when you go outside, when you walk outside and it's daytime, you see the sun and you just go on about your business. But do you know that you're surrounded by rainbow colors? You just can't see them because you don't have a prism.
Wow, I just learned something.
Right.
No, I just
Well,
learned something. Yeah.
You see a rainbow if
Right.
it just rained, or there's moisture in the air, or if you're walking
Yes.
past sprinklers, or if you have a diamond ring on, you put
Right.
it out in the
Right.
sun and you see it. The colors are always there. Your eyes just can't detect them, because a prism is what really separates those frequencies. So you can actually see the different frequencies, which to your brain is communicating
Wow.
color. And so once you really watch, you'll go outside like, wow, I'm surrounded by rain.
I definitely will.
Yes, but leaders do that with people. Like, how do we do that with people? Like, I see you. I more or less have had just a few conversations with you.
Right.
But if you were on my team, my ability as a leader to really see you and get to know you and have you tell about your story and watch how you interact with people and get to know what you do on your free time, that's when I can pull out the colors of your talents and your gifts and your abilities, some abilities that you're not even aware of that I have to be mindful of, to kind of show you and to grow you as a person on my team. So a prismatic leader has refined those skills of observation, of empathy, of association and connection, and metaphorical crossover. So, let's say you're gardening, like you love to garden, right? That tells me you're very observant. You're very patient. You're able to communicate with a different species. So I hope you're able to communicate with your own.
Right.
And so you're just over there gardening, having fun. Yet I'm seeing all these gifts and abilities that I can transfer over into the workforce, or also bring to your awareness for your own personal development as well.
Wow. Yeah, and now I see why you're such an amazing speaker, because that you're making me think a lot about just leadership. And you just, even just when people leave companies and people leave organizations, it's normally not because of the company, it's normally because of leadership.
Yes.
Normally. Right. And a big word that I really love is empathy. In my personal life and professional life, I think, me being in a place of when I had to lead people myself in the corporate world, I led it with empathy. And I think that was the one thing that some of my employees said to me, was like, yeah, you really get it. You understand, like, you're empathetic. Like, you are, like, you know how to, manage different personalities, because life is hard. That's number one. And sometimes we just think, okay, we'll just leave all your stuff at the door and just work. But sometimes life gets so hard. Sometimes you can't.
Well, we're realizing with the neuroscience how difficult that is. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to come at it from the psychobiological viewpoint, perspective, because we do have a lot of people out there saying, go be more empathetic. And there's a lot of people like, okay, well, what do I do? Like, what does that look like? And so yes. I just, me being a psychologist, or I have my psychology degree, I'm not a licensed psychologist, but educator, or someone who works deeply with people, understanding how the brain works and the mind and the brain. The mind is different from the brain, but they are connected, is key. And something you might want to know about empathy is the neuroscientists are showing, and I'll give your viewers a place to go and do more research on this. It's fascinating that the brain actually works on two separate networks when it comes to empathy. Mm-hmm. That if my brain, which does this with everyone, automatically classifies you as someone in my in-group, I'm more able to empathize with you. I'm more able to shift perspective to see where you're coming from. I'm more able to acknowledge and respect your agency and your ability to make choices. Mm. And if for some reason I look at you and my brain automatically classifies you as an out-group, those networks shut off.
Wow.
Yes. So this is more than just telling people, go be more empathetic. It's deeper. It's deeper. It's rooted in the subconscious. And so that's why, I don't really say I do DEI work, but I, talk a lot about inclusion. That's why we have to get to the neuroscience aspect of it, because it's more than, because leaders, people who lead groups, like, your mindset affects the mindset, the identity of everyone who you're over. Like, you can make or break someone's self-esteem, self-view of himself, identity. A teacher within a classroom, a leader within an organization, or a parent within in a home, any type of authoritative figure has unconsciously that ability. And so if you're not aware of your brain's grouping,
wow,
brain's shutting off networks, you know, all this stuff, you could really do some harm. And you've seen it probably, you know, in your
oh yes,
past, the harm being done. And you've also seen the opposite,
right.
People being built well and people being encouraged well and
yes.
brought up to that next level to shine, and seeing abilities that they didn't even know they had, but because they had leaders, prismatic leaders, that's what the end result was.
It's so interesting that you say that, because I never thought about the science behind it, to be honest with you. I was always of the mindset, and I'm sure some other people are too, is that you see that you have it or you don't. You're either empathetic, you see that you have an empathetic heart, or you don't, right? And I think what you're saying is that, hold on, it's not that simple. And that's something that I'm learning that now from you, you know, because it's just for me, I'm like, you either have that trait, but you don't. You have compassion, you have empathy, or you don't. It's how you treat people, right? I guess that's how, even for me, that's how I was raised, right? To have empathy, to have compassion, but to not just people who look like you or to anybody that you see. You have respect for the janitor, you have respect for the president, you don't treat them any differently, right? That, like, those type of upbringings and things like that. So in my mind, when I see leaders and people who don't have that, I'm like, they just don't have it, but you're actually teaching it. And that's amazing.
Yes. And I want to point out something that you touched upon that's key. I tell people I kind of have an edge on corporate trainers because I spent 15 years of my career in K-12 education. So now I work with adults mostly. I still have my nonprofit, so I still work with youth. They'll always be my heart, right?
Mm-hmm.
I now earn money through working with
adults.
And when I tell them, I'm looking at these 30-year-olds, 40-year-olds, 60-year-olds, I'm like, I have your formative years in mind. 0 through 12 are your most important years. 0 through 4 are the most critical years of a human being's life. Be very mindful of that because of what the brain's doing at that time. But right. I just say 0 through 12. And when you look at intercultural development, you know, people's ability to really connect with different people from lived experiences and mm-hmm. take the time and listen and shift perspective. And even though they may not fully agree with them, they're able just to see where they're coming from and,
right.
and empathize. That's a developmental skill, like you just pointed out, correct?
Correct.
Just like math, right? I have a 5-year-old boy in the other room. I'm not going to give him trig and then be yelling at him because he can't do trigonometry right now, because developmentally he's not there yet. Now, right. I'm never going to look at him and say, you'll never do trig. I just say, there are some things that you need to go through first to get to that level. Like he's adding, you know, subtracting across zeros, and you skip counting. You skip counting at 3. People are like, what? He can skip count as 3? It's like, it's just repetition. You know, just right. do it to a song and it's just done, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's a developmental thing. And I believe intercultural development, there's the word development in there for a purpose, is we have to understand that the formative years were key, and it's a continuum. You know, your listeners can look up the IDI, the Intercultural Development Inventory, or the Intercultural Development Continuum by Dr. Michael Hammer. And it talks about some people were more in a monocultural mindset. They were raised around everyone who looked like them, believed like them, everything was the same. So their brain during these formative years are structuring their reality that way. And then it's a continuum. You have people more on some other people on the other side, more interculturally developed. Maybe mm-hmm. they have parents who traveled a lot, or like what you're claiming that your upbringing held. You had people who were very intentional, saying people are coming from different lived experiences, different backgrounds. We respect everyone. We respect everyone's lived experience. And that's funny you say that, because I say the same thing to my son. Like janitor, people living in tents on the street. So he just met the mayor, you know, last year. I don't care who it is. You know, we look them in the eye and we always show appreciation. And so he's saying to people, you know, thank you for your service. You know, anyone in bright orange jacket, bright orange vest. Thank you for your service. Like the police people, people, you know, because it's my job to interculturally develop him. I can't expect for him to be a 35-year-old and be treating people with kindness and respect if he didn't get that developmental training and during his youth, when the brain is formulating its basis and foundation. And so the last point I'll make is, because it's a developmental process, it really put me in a place of grace of people who were like, it's like, what's wrong with you? Like, you're leading and just don't have it. Oh, because they weren't developed.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of has me say, and number one, I don't get offended. Like, you can call me whatever you want. Shows me that you haven't gone through that. And that has no bearing on who I am as a person, my identity. It just shows me that you kind of miss some things. Right. And maybe you might want to be open to having new relationships and new contacts and getting new stories and starting to feel what other people feel and what other people have gone through.
Wow, that's amazing. And so when you're out teaching and training, right, how hard is it to take someone who, let's just say they're 35 or 40, cases, and they've been leading a certain way, to change, to shift, to learn, right? Something that's new, right? Like, is there value in that? Like, when they see that, especially when you're dealing with powerful people, probably who are making a certain level of money, right? I've made this, that, and the third, so why do I need to change? And sometimes money is a thing, right? Because I've been successful this way for so long. Why do I need to change my leadership abilities? Obviously, something's been going right. You know, so I assume you come across a lot of some of these leaders, right? So how do you navigate those waters when you're training and teaching people something like this that's so valuable?
Well, the first thing is always check myself and that I'm in a humble position. And another thing is, I think a lot of my work is landing well right now with many types of cultural groups is because I'm not, number one, I'm not coming through the door of DEI. And, you know, I don't really say I'm a DEI because sadly, you know, a lot of people have bias against that. And that's a like an automatic yep. wall that some yep. people put up depending on if you go to certain parts or certain levels. So intercultural creativity is something different. It's saying that I need to be mindful of my assumptions. I need to be mindful of my formative years, right? I have a very, very famous avocado story I say during my keynotes. Mm-hmm. And just the fact that I was an adult that didn't know anything about avocado. Why? Because my mother didn't like avocado. So she never brought it into the home. So mm-hmm. because of her bias against avocado, I now grew up, you know, and had no experience with avocado, didn't cook with it, didn't know you can put it on your face and your hair. It's so versatile, mm-hmm. you know, so I lost that creative element in my cuisine, let's say, because mm-hmm. of my mother's bias. You see that with how that works?
Yes.
And so you have a few elements in that one question. So it's that number one, meeting people where they are, for the facilitator to have compassion and understand that it's a developmental process, just like I'm not going to yell at my son for not knowing trigonometry, mm-hmm. right? Because he's never been exposed to the right. building blocks of it. And then the other thing is, once again, once you come in with the neuroscience, you can't debate the neuroscience. And so your people might want to look up my podcast on Create and Grow. Mm-hmm. And episode 66, I sat down with Dr. Michael Platt, who's one of the top neuroscientists in the nation out of the Wharton Neuroscience Initiative. And he talked about ego, what ego does to the brain. It shrinks your social brain network. When your parents were telling you, you need to connect with everyone, no matter what type of job they have, you know, always see people with respect and make that connection, try to get people's stories, try mm-hmm. to, you know, have friendships with, you know, just different groups.
Yeah.
That expands your social brain network because your brain is literally changing neural pathways in order to accompany or to make room for these people's lived experiences, right? And if you are rising in position in an organization, we now have proof that it shrinks your social brain network because yeah, exactly what you said. I'm this high. I don't really have to change. I've done my thing. Look, you know, unless you are a leader who takes initiative to make sure that doesn't happen. Ego puts on blinders, right?
Yes.
Position and status, high status, it puts on blinders where you're not even cognizant of the lived experiences of those so perceived as lower status. And so lastly, just a fun story. I've heard of this with a few leaders running very successful businesses. One person said, yeah, every Thursday morning before my day starts, he's in the kitchen with the housekeepers. And I think he runs a hotel. Mm-hmm. And he just sits and shares stories with the housekeepers. And now he says it's his most favorite time of the week. But what he's doing to his brain is, as the CEO of this establishment, he sees certain things, but the housekeepers see other things that he doesn't get to see, right? They have a perspective that he has no awareness of. And so by him just spending that hour with them, mm-hmm. he now has that perspective, and he's building trust, and that trust is a whole other top topic as well. And right. So leaders need to be very, very mindful of that. And I can kind of see it in people. I can see the ones who take initiative to keep those connections there. And right. then you see the ones who like egos it and don't even talk to me if you're not even C-suite level, and like, who are you again?
You wow. know? You know, when you said that story about the CEO with that was hanging out with the housekeepers, it reminded me of a show called Undercover Boss. And so you can see once in those stories, once the leader started to hear some of the different stories from his own employees, either about the business or about their personal life, their whole perspective started to shift. And then you saw the compassion, and then you saw the empathy that would come after that, right? By hearing other stories. So like that's just reminded me of one of those shows I used to watch back in the day. But you're right. Man, you teach me a lot today. I'm not gonna lie to you. Thank you.
Well, and I'm a teacher.
True indeed. So what is the seven gems of intercultural creativity? What is that?
Well, it's in the color of the rainbow. And yes. Because once again, we are surrounded by light, but this light is actually filled with these many, many colors. And at the end of my keynotes, I actually do sing a part of that song, Colors of the Rainbow, So Pretty in the Sky, right? Mm-hmm. I have men crying too. It's great. Because music moves you, right? It really
does. It does.
Connect across cultures. And the seven gems are the different mindset areas and abilities and cognitive abilities mm-hmm. that both affect your cultural development, right? Your ability to connect with people and your creative thinking. Now, mm-hmm. when I say creativity, I don't just mean artistry, not just singing and dancing and painting, right. Your ability to come up with new ideas and see new associations and problem solve and problem find. That's what I mean by creative thinking, which does include the arts as well.
Right.
And what it is, if I can run through them really quick,
absolutely.
So number one is creative growth mindset. Which means you have to understand that you can get better at this. It's a developmental mm-hmm. thing. You can get better mm-hmm. at creativity. You get better at cultural development. Number two is the empathetic way, right? To be empathy. People think about empathy as a social, you know, connection skill with people. To be a great creative, you need to have empathetic imagination. I need mm-hmm. to imagine, you know, empathetically what this person is going through and how I can solve their problem and how I can create an invention to solve their problem. So it goes across both fields. The third one is observation. Mm-hmm. People, you know, you're in sales training, communication training, leadership training. Have you ever heard of observational training?
Mm.
It's going to be a thing. And you'll be like, I spoke to her in 2023 before it was a thing. And now it's a thing, right?
Yep.
Because you can't be creative with things you're not even aware of, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you look That's at true. the color spectrum, it's a sliver of rainbow light. And then you have all this other part of the spectrum, like gamma rays, microwaves, and ultraviolet ray, things we can't even see with our senses. We have sounds we can't hear. Other animals can hear. We can't even detect. So we're already at a deficit, right? Mm-hmm. And so I go through trainings of how do you just increase your observational skills, wow. right? But this mm-hmm. means with people, and you said it, like you're just aware, you can see people and your team members saying, wow, like you just see things that I didn't know, like, you know, that's yeah. an observational skill. Good prismatic leaders have that, but mm-hmm. you can get it in creative thinking and in cultural development. The next one's curiosity. They say if creativity is the driver of innovation, curiosity. Mm-hmm. is the driver of creativity. And so what does it look like to increase the curiosity of the people I want to connect with and support, but also in creative thinking? And yes, so the next one's perspective shifting, to be a great perspective shifter with people, important, but also creative thinking, to shift around an idea, a problem, an invention, a curriculum you're trying to create, a podcast branding. You know, you need to be able to shift, like, hey, well, what are my people seeing? What are they seeing? The next one's authentic adaptation. The research, I'm heavily research, being a UCLA Bruin, you have to be like, nothing can come out of my mouth unless I can back it up by research, right? But adaptation, there's a great TED talk by Dr. Shimi Kang, Shimi, and she looked at a lot of her patients, and the ones who really fared well were the ones who knew how to adapt.
That is true.
And that's huge. And in my framework, I put authentic adaptation, because I can adapt well. I can teach children, adults. I sit with people. We serve people who are experiencing homelessness. And I've sat in people who run multi-billion-dollar companies, literally right next to me in the same day. Wow. I have to shift quickly, be mindful of who I'm connecting with. But throughout all, I'm still Janine. I'm not being, you know, so that's the authentic adaptation. I can adapt to meet who I need to meet, but I never lose the essence of who Janine is, right?
Right.
And that's why I teach with Legos and Play-Doh, even with C-suite. I'm like, hey, this is how I do it. This is me. I don't care if you're kindergarten or you're running Kmart, whatever. And then the last one's being a bridge, and great people know how to be a bridge. There's a great book called The Medici Effect by Franz Johansson, and he said, innovation happens at the intersection of fields, disciplines, and cultures. So people who are at the intersection, you know, and that's what creativity is. It's people who are combining, like me, intercultural development with creative thinking, intercultural creativity, you know, combining things. You know, the iPhone is just a combination of different things together. And so, and people who can bridge people together, those are the people who you want on your team. They're boundary spanners, right? They know how to, I talk about that in my book as well, which people can pick up.
Oh, yes. We're going to get to that. Oh, we're going to get to that too.
So those are the seven gems of intercultural creativity, all wrapped around a diamond of light.
Man, that's really powerful. And, you know, you're, you know, just having this conversation with you and talking to you, you are a natural born speaker. Like I can tell, you know, and educator too, obviously. Right. And when we spoke, I think the first time, I think you shared with me about speech impediment. Right. So that's what we have in common, you know. But what I want to know from you is, how did you overcome that? Right. To become this amazing speaker, and you're in education, so of course you taught, but it's like, well, going out into the public, keynote speaker, that is amazing, right? So how did you overcome, I guess, fear, shame? Because I'm not saying that you thought those things, but I know for me, coming from a certain point in my life, there was fear, there was shame, embarrassment, things like that, right? So how did you become, you know, the speaker that you are today, in spite of that speech impediment?
You know, that's his whole other podcast right there, right?
It is.
You know, I wouldn't say in spite of, and it's been a relationship. So that is one of my identities. I identify as a woman of African descent, you know, an educator, a mother's sister, daughter, but I'm also a stutterer. And through elementary school, you know, I had speech impediment, and I had to leave classroom and go to speech therapy and do that long walk down the hallway, looking up at God, like, why did you make me like this? Why can't I talk? And that always, you know, I would cry myself to sleep many nights. And especially having a twin sister who won like speech debates and poetry contests. So that is like added insult to injury. She's brilliant and a wonderful person, very supportive and very kind. But it still does a number on your identity. Yeah. And here's why. Because we are speaking beings, right? One thing that really makes us different from a lot of animals. I know there are some animals who do communicate, but not on the level as us, right?
Right.
And speech is so powerful, and it's a way that you transfer your ideas. So I thought my ideas were stupid, not because of any cognitive issues, but because I couldn't communicate them fluently. And then I had that projective assumption, like, oh, people think I'm an idiot. And I remember walking up to a provost of a university. She just got off the stage, and I went to introduce myself. And I don't know how you're stuttering, because different people have different things, but I sometimes have blocks where I want to say something and like nothing comes out. Right. Oh, and I was just like, I walked away so defeated. Like it ended up coming out, but I just beat myself up that day. I was kind of, and I'm like, and this was like 35, so I'm a grown woman, a woman still dealing with this. And a friend of mine wrote a book called Stutter Boy. And he stutters as well. And it's a little small book of kind of like nonfiction, but fiction as well. It's by this little black boy that had a stutter, and he was just telling story, and he would like pick up the phone and nothing come out. And it was almost like a dual story where, he was in a room and there was a light and everything. And so it was like almost like the never ending story. Remember, there's like this dual story going on. And I remember being on my floor reading this book, just reading it just to kind of support him. And then I just start crying, like release, because I felt that someone else in the world knew what I was going through. Once again, I'm a grown woman. not saying grown women can't cry, because we all do cry, but and men, men cry, please cry.
Absolutely.
It's a biological release of energy.
Absolutely.
But yeah, and it was just like, oh my goodness, and it just felt so releasing that I didn't know I was carrying this on the subconscious level, just the pain and just the heartache of not thinking that I was whole. And so that was the day that I just reframed it. You know what? I stutter, but my ideas are good. I'm well researched. I know my stuff. Of course, I stuttered in front of my students, but they're a little bit, more forgiving. But yeah, I didn't do too much in front of adults, and mostly. But now it's so interesting that it is not my liability, it's my superpower. Here's why. This is going to blow everyone's mind, because the fact I have a picture of me on the TEDx stage, right? And I show that picture during my keynotes, and I say my third grade teacher would be very surprised to see that photo, because she had to send me to speech therapy 3 times a week. And then I go into, but I had prismatic leaders. I had teachers and parents and counselors and bosses who saw the light in me, saw the colorful gifts in me, and took time. They were curious. They were empathetic. They shifted perspective so I could be my best and be in front of you today. I'm talking, once again, I got people crying, and then I'd sing the song at the end, and just it's just because. And people know it, that they may not stutter, but they're dealing with something, right? And so that hits a nerve. And another thing is, people are like, wow, you stutter, but you're up here. Like, there's people who don't have speech impediments and who will not get on a stage.
Absolutely. That's why I'm saying it's so amazing.
So that just speaks to empowering people. Like, and I'm basically saying it without saying it. If I can do this, if I can share this idea and share my story, what's stopping you? What a lot of times it's our own limitations that are stopping us. And if you're going to doubt anything, doubt the limitations, don't doubt yourself. And so it's my superpower, because it's something that, and I come from a faith-based background.
Me too.
So I just feel that God gave it to me. And I was to say this, I feel gave it to me on purpose in order for me to build the muscle to continue through. And the last thing I'll say is, people asked me, or I was asked, if you could be born again without your stutter, would you do that? And I had, of course, the first answer is yes. But then I had to think about it hard. I wouldn't be the woman I am today if I didn't have that journey. And that journey was part of my path, and I'm proud of it. I still stutter today. You can probably hear it. Now that people know, you can probably pick it up, especially if you listen to my podcast and stuff. And I still get self-conscious. I'm still human. Still human, but people know, and sometimes I just tell them, you know, that. And then I found that there's a group at a university, like there's a National Stuttering Association. Like, what? There's a groups out there, you know. And I'm once again a grown woman not knowing this. I wish
I didn't know that
I would have had access to these things during my formative years. But that's
yeah, it's an amazing story. And I remember when you said that you read that book and, you know, like you cried and stuff. But that's a real thing, because a lot of times you don't read, like, I don't meet, and this is just me personally, I don't meet a lot of people who stutter. So when you told me that, you know, that you have that, I was like, hey, like, you know, like, hey, me too, right? You know?
Yeah, me, yes, me too. Like,
maybe, 'cause I don't meet a lot of people, like, you know, who stutter like me, or who have had those type of things that go on, like, right? So I was like, oh my gosh, like, that's, she understands, like, she gets it, right? So I could just imagine, like, reading that book and hearing and reading that somebody understands you and goes through and everything else. So that brought me back. But yeah, and that's an amazing story. And honestly, people probably couldn't tell you stutter. You've probably well, gotten that too. Oh, really? You?
Yeah, because I do a lot of things, and I use my hands a lot. If the people who can see me, it helps me. And another thing I want to add really quick, so I think it could be beneficial, is after I read that book and ended up like crying on the floor, 2 weeks later, I picked up my guitar and I was just trying to figure out this song called Fix You by Coldplay. I don't know if you know it. When you try your best, but you don't succeed. Mm-hmm. You get what mm-hmm. you want, but not what you need, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm just trying to strum it. And then I slow down. I was like, wow, these lyrics, this is like Aaron's song. Aaron's the main character in this book.
Right.
I'm just like thinking about his journey and my journey and the lyrics of the song that was made, what, 10, 15 years before the book came out. And it was just like, it was voila, but that's a creative work. I'm making an association with two unassociated phenomenon, right?
Right.
And so that was the beginning of a lot of the work that you see me do today. And I'll be doing in this next decade, God willing, is allowing people to be more creative with their work, but also within themselves by looking at themselves through the lens of another medium. So I was looking at Aaron and Janine through the lens of this song. When you try your best, but you don't succeed. When you get what you want, but not what you need. Mm-hmm. When you feel so tired, but you can't sleep, stuck in reverse, right? Mm-hmm. When the tears come streaming down your face, when you lose something you can't replace. And then I change the words. When you say something, but it's erased or something like that. Could it be worse? You know, the light will guide you home, and I'll try to fix you. So those are the lyrics. Like, go back and listen to, seriously, for you.
Now
go
I am.
Yeah. To that song.
Now I am. Because I've heard it multiple times.
Yeah.
But I've never really made that connection, right? I've heard it. I'm like, oh, this is a good song, right? But I'm like, okay. And I just, you know, you move on. But yeah, I'm going to listen to it now from a different lens.
The book actually has a character called The Light. So it was perfect. Mm-hmm. The light will die. Mm-hmm. You know, right. Mm-hmm. And so now the work that I'm doing today, and we're creating the curriculum for it now for C-suite, is because, you know, self-awareness is really big now. You know, self-awareness. Yeah. Be self-aware in this Banny environment, which is brittle, anxious, nonlinear, and incomprehensible. Banny. Mm-hmm. And yeah. You got to be self-aware, but here's an artistic way to do this. The arts are so important because it bridges the brain, the subconscious part of the brain and the conscious part of the brain, something called your default mode network. And so I was like, I got to figure this out. But I would not have gone through that experience had I not had my stutter and picked up my guitar.
Wow, that's powerful. Man. So my brain, my beautiful brain. Yeah. Want to get into that. It's a children's book, right?
No, it's not.
I'm sorry. So then I misspoke. I just saw kids on it. So I was like, okay, it's kids.
It's an inner child's book.
Oh, an inner. Okay. I see what you're doing. Okay. I see what you're. Oh, see, now I'm excited. Okay. So talk to me about this particular book. What is it about? You know, you don't have to give too much of it because I want people to go out and get it and purchase it. But what is the premise of it?
Well, the first book is I Am Creative, written by my 3-year-old son at the time, he's 5 now, and myself. And
So amazing.
so that is just going through the 16 diamond tools of creativity, but through the eyes of a child. Like, what does it look like? You know, they look at
Wow.
everything from all angles. You know, they're being curious and observant. What does that look like? And so that went well. And so my beautiful brain is now that I'm fully into the neuroscience aspect of what does it mean to be fully human, fully creative, and living with purpose and passion and focus too, right? But what does our brain have to do about it? You know, what is, you know, and you just heard me talk about, you know, the subconscious, the default mode network, all
Yes.
of these networks of empathy and compassion or division and loathing and hatred. Like what's going on there? And even though so the book doesn't get into like division and all that other stuff,
Right.
but it does get into the different areas of the brain and what they do and how they work together. And then at the end, we also talk about Howard Gardner's multiple intelligences. So as an educator, I do apologize to your audience. You know, the school system didn't do the best of jobs of making sure you were educated in so many areas that are so important now, such as the arts, such as social interaction and building your social network and communication, right? Where you know you have your math, you know. but that, you know, that A squared plus B squared equals C squared can only take you so far, right?
Only so far, yes.
So this book it's in rhyme form. It's a poetry book, and it just says my brain, my beautiful brain. Ideas flow through it like rivers of rain, right? And so I want people to fall in love with their brain. And the reason why I don't write children's books, I write inner child's books, is because once again, you'd be surprised how many grown men and women, and friends, they just they never really dealt with some of the inner child,
Yes.
you know, loss of creativity, loss of curiosity, loss of their ability to be free and just go frolic and run with the trees, you know, and what. But now I'm saying, hey, here's what's happening in your brain when you spend
Right.
time in nature. Here's what's happening with your brain when you get around people who don't look like you and
Right.
get stories and stop judging automatically and just listen. Just listen. Here's what's happening in your brain when you play music and you dance. You know, your cerebellum is in the back of your brain. I really wish I had my brain is back there, but I don't want to get up and leave the shot. But your cerebellum is the back part of your brain. It's packed with so many neurons, and it's used to keep you upright and keep you balanced and when you're walking and things and exercising. But what they're finding out is it also monitors your prefrontal cortex, which is a part of your brain where you're solving problems, you're thinking about the future, you're using your imagination, your creativity. And so if you've ever been stuck with a night, you know, you're just stuck with your thoughts, you're like, okay, I gotta just get up and walk. That's your body saying, I activate your cerebellum. Because, you know, go exercise, go for a run, because then the cerebellum can make your prefrontal cortex run more efficiently. And so that's why everything is connected. Your diet, your amount of water, your brain is made of 90% of water, and that's for a reason. You exercising, right? And the last point I'll make is this is connected to intercultural development. Your brain has a certain amount of energy and a budget. They call it like a brain budget. And so if your brain doesn't have enough energy to keep your organs going, it's not going to want to spend the extra energy you need to be creative, which takes more work in your brain, right? It's not going to want to spend the extra energy to connect with someone from a different lived experience. That takes more work from your brain because they don't have a schema. They don't have a predictive line of action what's going to happen because you don't know these people. You don't
Right.
know their culture. You don't know what they're going to do. So your brain has to work harder to see connections and see clues and try to predict. And so, yeah, if your brain is taxed, of course you don't want to create or connect
True.
with different types of folks. So it all comes down to the brain and our mind.
Wow. I love that. Peak performance. So this book is for business-minded folks. I think that I can say that, right? People who run businesses and who want to own companies and or who work for Fortune, whatever companies, and their managers and leaders, right? So what is this book about? Like, what is it? Like, what can people expect from this particular book?
Well, they can expect me and 23 other thought leaders around the nation. This book was put together by one of our actually cafe speakers and facilitators, Eric, and he just really during this was his creative brainchild, you know, during the pandemic, everyone was at home. So he just reached out to amazing people and asked for them to submit a chapter. This was like three books earlier. And this was one of his like third or fourth book, but it was about business. And so him and I, he helped me publish some of my earlier books, and he just got some of the top thought leaders. So I'm writing about the seven gems of intercultural creativity in this book, and 23 other authors are writing just about mindset, about business, about different elements to help an entrepreneur run it more efficiently.
Awesome. Awesome. And you have a book here, From Debt to Destiny. Ooh-wee. Now, it's funny. I just did a video on TikTok about just this last stuff going on in the world today. And I think the world, the United States or whatever, is in trillions of dollars of consumer debt. Right. It just hit that. Right. And so it's intriguing. So he said, From Debt to Destiny. So I know obviously the book is about getting out of debt and stuff like that. But from your lens, what can people expect from this book?
Sure. Well, it's once again, my apologies from K-12 education, how we have graduated millions of students with no financial literacy at all. And I personally don't think that was a mistake. I think it was planned that way, but that's for another day. And so I just remember reading a book by, I don't know if you know, a man by the name of Dave Ramsey. And
Dave Ramsey.
Yeah. And he wrote or did the whole baby steps and financial freedom books. And I remember my aunt gave it to me and I just read it right after I got married and didn't really know too much about finances, and just sitting there once again on the carpet. And I talk about this in my TED talk. This is the opening story. I'm like, why don't I know this basic information? This is crazy. You know, we can do all these physics and chemistry, but we don't know how credit cards work at all. Right. Like, why is that? And I always am very curious. So I'm like, okay, well, who wins here? Oh, the banks win. You know, who loses, you know? And so I just did, I'm well researched. So I started just doing my research, and my husband and I paid off all of the debt. We did our debt free screen. You can go look online because I had a lot of student loans. Thank goodness Shane, my husband, just had like $3,000 in student loans, but I had like 70 among everything else. And yeah, and I believe I love writing because like Maya and Angelou, you know, who has passed. It's like, has she really passed? Her work is still here. Her videos are here. Her books are here. Her activism is still here. She's still alive, even though her body is no longer here. She's still creating and working, or her creations are still working, should I say. And so for me, writing what I learned in a book and just leaving it here, it can help my great, 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 great grandchildren. And I'm not even here to see it, but it's still working. And so I write in a special way. I'm a storyteller. I'm a jokester. So it's not like a whole nonfiction type of book. There's stories. I do a lot of metaphors as you heard before. And then there's a chapter about creativity, because my quote is, your creative health affects your financial wealth.
Ooh.
Your creative health. Right. We go back to creativity, your ability to think creatively, to make associations, to think of new ideas and see how you can bring them to the marketplace, affects your financial wealth. So you've seen me do in the past 3 years, and all these keynotes and speaking corporate trainings and being paid money to do stuff came from my brain.
Well, yeah.
It came from my imagination. Right. And I did have to do work, you know, it is work. Take it from my imagination and bring it out and do the research behind it, get it vetted, get it supported, put it out so people make sure it's there, it's communicated well. But it came from my brain.
Right.
Like, I typed up two paragraphs of a class, sent it off, and got a contract worth amount of money that I don't even want to say out loud. And so, but I'm like, But I'm telling people, this isn't just some magic pixie dust over me. It's for everyone. But you went through a school system that educated you out of your creativity. And so I'm here to say, I can't stand by and keep my mouth shut or just have it for me and my family and not tell anyone else. And so, yeah, get the book or contact me and I can sign it for you. If they go to JeneeLeppard.com or CafeStrategies.com, they can get their book signed even by my 5'5" year old. Hey, he might be famous one day. You never know.
That's a fact. He's already an author.
Two books in, and he's working on his third nonfiction book about sprinklers because he just has this thing about sprinklers.
Wow. So,
yeah.
Creativity. And kids have a lot of it. Kids have a lot of it.
And we tell them to be quiet and sit down.
See that part. And I think that's the thing. We have a lot of creativity, but I think life happens a lot. And like you said, with the school systems and things like that. And once you start working, sometimes, you know, you start working, you have kids. A lot of times it's just, you know, creativity about what I'm working. I'm coming home. I'm raising my kids. I'm going to sleep, and you lose that childlike nature of creativity sometimes. And I understand it, you know, to a point. But I think you're so right about it. Creativity and that quote that you said, man, like, you know, creative elf, man. That one right there is going to stick with me, and I hope it sticks with my listeners too.
Shirt. Yes.
Yeah, you need to put that on a shirt. Yeah, you need to put that on a whole shirt. Because it's I don't think people really think about that.
They don't. And to your point of, yeah, you know, I'm tired. I got four kids and a full-time job and everything. But we also know the research that your creativity affects your well-being. So if your brain is stuck in a routine or always tired, it's affecting your well-being. And so, you know, I do my little lives and just little tips to say, hey, here's something that can help your creativity. Not to think you have to be, you know, Van Gogh or artist creativity and other production, but artist creativity is very important. And that's the last point I'll make is creativity isn't only artistry, but artistry helps your creativity in non-arts areas. So if you're an accountant and you go take a painting class, that will sharpen your observational skills. Empathy skills go up. Your ability to transfer ideas from one field to another goes up. Your metaphorical thinking goes up. So many cognitive areas go up by just you know, taking a pottery class or going to sing karaoke or going to dance.
Karaoke's fun. Yeah. Karaoke's fun.
Well, we can karaoke.
So before we get out of here, tell the audience and the listeners where they can find you, where they can hear your keynote speaking, your TED Talks, social media. Just let them know where they can find you. And most importantly, where they can book you to speak.
I love to speak. And even though, yeah, I had such a hardship in the beginning of my life doing so, it's funny. I always say God has an interesting sense of humor.
I'm telling you.
Like, how do you give a speaker a speech impediment? Like, what is that about? But hey, Moses, right? But what I will say is my name is very uniquely spelled. So there's only one Jeneen Leppard like my name. I prefer you get the book from me. It is on Amazon, but I just love to see who's reading it. So if you do want to purchase the book from my site, JeneenLeppard.com or CafeStrategies.com. And I have a busy next 2 weeks. I have three keynotes in 1 week, and it's like a women's week, like the women in electronics, the women in educational leadership, and the women in medicine, which is Chicago. So they can reach out to me at Jeneen at cafestrategies.com, CAFFE strategies.com, or book me through the website and I will respond, or my team will respond. And my keynotes are like no other. Go to my LinkedIn, see the testimonials down there. Go to my YouTube and see some of the highlight videos because I'm always about highlight videos. Mm-hmm. As we were talking earlier, I'm a videographer and a photographer on the side. So I always love to capture the essence of what I'm doing, and you can see my work and people's testimonials about the work there. But definitely get a book It's where our nation is headed as far as creative thinking and leadership. So hopefully you'll be on the train on the earlier side.
Absolutely. I know I will be getting a couple of these books myself, actually. Very intrigued. All of the links will be here on the podcast. It'll be right up under here. So you can go click the links. I'm gonna make it very easy for you to go. You're not gonna have to research. All you gotta do is scroll down and click the links, and all of her information will be there. And you'll be able to just experience Janine and on a different level. So I thank you. I appreciate all of the work that you're doing. You're doing such an amazing work that needs to be done. And it's creative. And I've learned a lot in this conversation, and I know the listeners will too. So definitely appreciate you. We thank you. We honor you for coming on the show and all of the work that you're doing on. So definitely appreciate you. And this has been another episode of Conversations of the Heart. Be sure to click the link, subscribe, and share this podcast and share this episode to everybody, because everybody needs to see this. Appreciate you. Thank you so much. And I'll see you guys next week.